Our second case this morning is D'Anthony Nash v. Hepp, case number 12-1786. Mr. Patman.
May it please the Court. Good morning. My name is Michael Budlon, recent graduate of Notre Dame Law School, working on this case with Bob Palmer. I represent the petitioner, D'Anthony Nash, who respectfully urges this Court to reverse the decision of the District Court denying his motion, remand for a further hearing on the merits. Nash asserts that recent Supreme Court decisions give him cause to excuse his procedural default, specifically under the Martinez and Maples decisions. And I want to begin, actually, with the recent Supreme Court follow-up to Martinez, the Trevino decision, which expanded. Martinez held, of course, that there's cause to excuse procedural default when the state does not provide effective assistance of counsel in the initial review collateral proceeding, or as a matter of state law, it's the first chance to raise an ineffectiveness of trial counsel claim. And Trevino expanded that to say that even when the state does permit that to be raised under direct review, but the operation of the procedures make it virtually impossible to present them outside of the collateral proceedings in the typical case, that Martinez would extend to those situations. Now, Wisconsin requires them to be raised on direct review, but permits them under a 97406 motion to be raised in a collateral proceeding, which happened in this case. That's where the claim was first raised.
Well, that's where the problem comes in for your client, is that he didn't raise it in his 97406 motion. He raised it on the appeal from the dismissal of that motion or denial of that motion.
Your Honor, he tried to raise it in his initial motion, but because he was proceeding pro se following the abandonment from his trial attorney, he did not effectively raise it in his first initial motion. He mentioned it at the end, but not adequately enough to satisfy the pleading requirements of Wisconsin, and that's where the procedural default came in to the case.
Right, and the Court of Appeals held that it was waived because it wasn't raised in the initial 97406 motion, the only 97406 motion in this case. And so the procedural default is not by virtue of a mistake of counsel. It's by virtue of his own mistake.
Your Honor, with the argument Nash is asserting is that because he was not provided counsel at that initial review collateral proceeding, which was, under the operation of Wisconsin law, his first opportunity.
But if he had raised the issue in the original 97406 motion, he would have been successful and counsel would have been appointed for him under Wisconsin's procedures for raising this kind of motion.
Yes, Your Honor. The argument that we're advancing is that we recognize that he did not raise that effectively. And the argument is that he didn't do so because he was not provided counsel for that initial 97406 motion, which under Trevino, in a state where under the operation of the law, that's his first chance to raise it. He should have been provided counsel in that 97406 motion. And he was not, and he failed to raise his claim adequately.
I don't understand Trevino to mandate that states supply counsel in collateral proceedings.
Trevino is arguing that, or stating that, when under the operation of the state's criminal procedures, the first chance that the typical defendant has to raise his ineffective assistance of counsel claim is in that collateral proceeding, there's a requirement of effective assistance of counsel. And he was not provided counsel at all in that hearing, in that proceeding. And that is where the procedural default originated. Because without that counsel, he proceeded a defendant with no legal education, with no counsel, acting pro se, in prison, failed to adequately raise the claim.
But there's a predicate factual premise in Trevino, which is that the state's procedures for presenting the ineffective assistance claim as part of the direct review functionally eliminate that option. And that's not the case here. Wisconsin's procedures functionally require the claim to be made in conjunction with the direct appeal proceeding or in advance of the direct appeal, and counsel is supplied. And if he had, in his original 97406 motion, brought the facts to the attention of the state trial court that he had not had a direct appeal and that his counsel failed to file the notice of intent as required under Wisconsin law, then counsel would have been appointed. They would have unwound the whole thing and started over. I know Wisconsin's procedure is a little hard to follow and a little unique, but that's what would have happened functionally legally.
Absolutely, Your Honor. That is an ideal situation. Unfortunately, Nash did not have that direct appeal because of the abandonment by his attorney, which lapsed the time period to file that.
All he had to do is tell the trial court that in his 974-06 motion, the trial court would have unwound everything and said, okay, we're going to start over with counsel. And he would have been able to litigate his post-conviction claims.
Yeah, I believe I don't think Nash understood exactly what had happened to him with the abandonment by counsel.
But the procedure is way different than the Texas procedure, I guess, is what I'm understanding.
Texas permits a defendant to raise it on direct review, but allows them raise it on a collateral proceeding. Usually, most defendants in Texas typically will raise it on collateral proceedings. I think this kind of goes to the heart of the issue that we need to have an evidentiary hearing at a lower level because we don't know what the most common thing is in Wisconsin.
Well, let me take you in a little different direction. If we were to order that evidentiary hearing, would your client be able to show up?
I do not know, Your Honor.
You don't know where he is, do you?
I've not personally interacted with our client
right
at any point.
The status report from the state suggests that he's fugitive, more than suggests, indicates that he is.
Unfortunately, Your Honor, I don't have anything to counteract, but the state has. Like I said, I've not personally interacted with our client at any stage. I've merely interacted with the courts and the other party by brief.
So you have no additional information to add to the status report that was filed in response to the court order?
No, Your Honor.
You've heard of the fugitive disentitlement concept notion?
Unfortunately, Your Honor, I have not.
The gist of it is that if someone absconds while they have a matter pending related to a criminal case, that can be dismissed or deferred until they're back within the jurisdiction of the court. What would your position be about the potential for application of that here?
I would argue against dismissal if this court feels deferment would be the best option in that situation. I think that would.
All right. All right. Thank you.
So, reserving the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Weinstein.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Warren Weinstein. I'm an Assistant Attorney General of Wisconsin representing Warden Hepp. I think Mr. Nash's claim comes down to he's entitled to address his procedural default because of his pro se status, which this Court has already rejected on a number of occasions. The problem, as the Court pointed out in Mr. Nash's argument, is that had he come, he was entitled to bring a collateral attack on his conviction without having to demonstrate a sufficient reason, which is normally the situation in Wisconsin because Wisconsin requires ineffective assistance of trial counsel claims to be raised on direct appeal. And it has a rather elaborate procedure in Section 80930 in which counsel is appointed, the transcripts are prepared, there's a post-conviction motion if necessary, and the appeal is from both the judgment of conviction and the order denying a post-conviction motion. Normally, when someone goes through that and has a direct appeal, if they want to collaterally attack the judgment, they have to demonstrate a sufficient reason why the issue they want to raise was not raised on direct appeal. Mr. Nash was relieved of that because he didn't have a direct appeal. So all he had to do was plead in his motion in the circuit court, my attorney didn't file a notice of intent to pursue post-conviction relief. And as the court pointed out, the circuit court undoubtedly would have said, oh, well, we're going to reinstate your appeal rights, directed the clerk to forward the papers to the state public defender who would have appointed counsel, and it would have gone through as a direct appeal. But that didn't happen, and it didn't happen because Mr. Nash didn't put that claim in his circuit court pleading. He did put it in one sentence in a 15-page memorandum, according to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals rejected it because he hadn't raised it in the circuit court. So his default doesn't depend on any error by his counsel. It depends on his failure to plead his ineffective assistance of, this would have been trial counsel, because Wisconsin requires trial, the sentencing attorney to file the notice of intent. So it would have been a trial counsel claim, and he would have been entitled to raise it in the 97406 post-conviction motion, which is a collateral proceeding. And had he done so, he would have undoubtedly gotten a direct appeal. He didn't do it.
So he was actually reminded or advised of this by the circuit court at the time he filed his 97406.
Yes, he got the notice of post-conviction rights, and he signed it, where it said you have 20 days in which to file a notice of intent.
Actually, I was talking about later in the process. I know he got the CR.
Sorry.
I know he and his counsel signed a form at sentencing that's required before you leave the courtroom, acknowledging notice of your post-conviction remedies and appeal rights, and he checked the box saying he wanted to appeal. His attorney checked his section of the form. I'm talking about later when he filed his 97406 motion, post the true collateral attack motion, and the circuit court denied it, but noted that his attorney had failed to file the notice of intent and practically invited him and instructed him how to seek reinstatement of his appeal rights. At least that's my understanding of the record.
I think that's fair.
And instead of following those instructions, he took an appeal.
Right.
And for the first time raised this ineffective assistance claim before the State Court of Appeals.
Right. He put it in his brief. That was the first time. That at least the first time he put anything other than ineffective assistance. It's the first time he ever alleged any facts from which anybody could tell what he was complaining about. So, and that's why the Court of Appeals rejected it.
So what about the fugitive disentitlement doctrine? Should we even get to any of this procedural stuff?
Well, I didn't research that in the federal system. In Wisconsin, there is a case which says that if a party absconds while an appeal is pending, it's an abandonment of the appeal. But whether or not that would apply in habeas, because of the curiosity of the fact that the court has jurisdiction if the person's in custody when the petition is filed, which, this being 4 or 5 years old, he clearly was.
Of course, it would make some sense to apply a doctrine like that, because we don't want to encourage people to jump their supervision and then try to litigate while they're unknown.
I would agree with that. Yes, it would make a lot of sense, and I suspect that the appropriate doctrine in the federal system would be mootness, which is normally the situation when somebody is in custody at the filing of the petition, but later is discharged, and then the court can't really award any meaningful relief.
Not trying to encourage you to ask for it, but it seems to me that it's troubling when the report that we issue the order and the reports come back, yours does, saying
from a strategic point of view, we'd prefer to have the court write an opinion that said Martinez versus Ryan doesn't apply to Wisconsin. But since that court requested that issue, we would like to have a reported decision to that effect. So in that regard, we'd probably prefer a merits decision. But I think the court would be justified to hold the case moot.
This mostly is a hindsight thing, and I guess it's a lot of self-inflicted wounds along the way. Is there some method that if he shows up and whatever, to start over in under state law?
Well, if he would have successfully pleaded his ineffective assistance of trial counsel claim for failing to meet that deadline.
Yeah, I knew he did. He didn't do any of this.
But
so all this is sort of a reflection. He should have did on this. He got notice, all sorts of things that he didn't do.
Right.
But it seems that they're saying, yeah, but he never had a lawyer and didn't know any better. That seems to be the theme. Somebody probably should have told him he shouldn't take.
Well, in an appropriate case, we've had the district court or this court order a new appeal in cases. And several of them, it happened quite frequently at the beginning of our no merit procedure because there was not a lot of documentation about what would happen. Many times when the public defender is appointed, they'll meet with the client and discuss the appeal, and then when the prisoner finds out that the only option for the attorney is a no merit report, they'll just ask the attorney to close the file. At the beginning of, shortly after the McCoy decision and that process was put in place in Wisconsin, there was not a lot of documentation when that happened about whether or not the defendant had actually waived counsel or agreed to abandon the appeal. And we had a number of cases from the federal system where it was sent back, the case was sent back to the state court for a new appeal. A lot of those resulted in no merits. But the Court of Appeals has tightened its procedures considerably since then and now requires attorneys to give notice to the defendant and file the notice, and so there's a better record when that sort of thing happens. I'm not sure that answers your question.
Well, I'm just curious if there's a way, because doesn't seem to be any way back other than something.
We certainly do have situations where new direct appeals are reinstated, or a direct appeal is reinstated. There are no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Patlin. You've got 3 minutes left.
May it please the Court. I think the argument in terms of Martinez and its applicability to Wisconsin is really captured in the supplemental authority that was filed about Trevino, which is that it's not just the design of the state's procedure, but also its operation, how it goes into effect within the state. And it's quite easy to foresee cases in Wisconsin where either in this situation there's an abandonment and so the matter is raised in a collateral proceeding, or where the original counsel is retained and raises the matter, wouldn't raise an ineffective assistance of trial counsel claim in the direct review, and it would have to be raised later in a collateral proceeding. And what the court was looking at there was the most common situation was for defendants in Texas. And nothing in the record before us speaks to what exactly is the most common typical situation within Wisconsin, how commonly these are raised as required by law, but not in its operation, in its effect.
It's well known in Wisconsin that you've got to raise your ineffective assistance of trial counsel claim immediately after conviction before bringing a direct appeal. That's the most common practice because it's required by the rules very plainly in a long series of Supreme Court cases in Wisconsin saying that. So ineffective assistance claims are commonly litigated with counsel before the direct appeal. That's the most common practice. So what happened here is uncommon and remedied by 97406 by unwinding the whole procedure and appointing counsel for the purpose of litigating all claims that were lost by counsel's failure to file the notice of intent.
Yes, Your Honor, but I think the argument that Nash asserts is just that in this situation particularly, that the abandonment, the chain of events was so egregious that left him without counsel there in his initial review collateral proceeding, where for him, under the application of the law, was his first chance to raise the argument that demonstrates the cause to excuse the procedural default, that is the extraordinary circumstances within this case, within a situation where there's nothing in the record what happened to the attorney. He promised to file the notice. He disappeared. Nash made his share of missteps along the way, acting pro se without the guidance of an attorney, and that just as the law was applied to him under Wisconsin's procedures, he was left without counsel when he raised this in his collateral proceeding. Thank you.
Let's hope he gets a habeas question on his bar exam. Good luck.
Our thanks to both counsel, and Mr. Patlin, thanks to you for taking this appointment. You have the thanks of the court.